Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth. Back with us is Constantine von Hofmeister. He is an independent writer, journalist. What was the company that you...
Multipolar Press.
Yeah, Multipolar Press, that's it, Multipolar right. Press.
So that's my company.
Right? And you've got a book coming out.
Well, I have lots of books coming out. I just wrote a book. It's called The Fate of White America. It was published a couple of months ago. Yeah. I published
it on Amazon.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, of course. Right. Yeah, yeah. Also, before that, I published a book by Tim Kirby, and he's probably the most famous American in Moscow, in Russia.
I don't know. There's a lot of.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
Right then. Where does one relocate properly? Desert? 40 degrees? No water? Forests, rivers, four seasons. Desert, 40 degrees, no water. Forests, rivers, four seasons.
It's actually much simpler than most people think.
Good Lord, that's less paperwork than a gym membership.
As a British man, I chose the place where I can still complain about the weather properly.
All right, let's head that way. Sounds good, I'm ready.
Move to Russia. Start a new life. It's easier with Moscow Connect. Website for details, moscowconnect.ru.
Famous Americans these days.
Well, he's pretty famous, right? Because he has his podcasts and everything. And I mean, he's been in Russia for a long time, over 20 years. And he wrote a science fiction novel called Ultra Heavy, which is basically like Warhammer 40,000 style, set in the future, but it's about the Russian Empire, like 3,000 years from now, like colonizing other solar systems and planets and encountering like strange creatures and threats, basically, threats to the reign of the Tsar. Yes. And so special forces have to be sent out into space to deal with them. Yeah, very, very, very well written. And politically incorrect, because it's not just like some primitive plot, because it has a lot of political subtext. It's basically multipolarity in the future with a lot of analogies to what is happening today in the world. Yes. Okay. And that's the first in a series. Yeah. So the first one is called Book One, Edge of Empire, but many more will follow. And it's highly recommended.
I guess I should send you my I wrote a book, never got it published back. Good Lord. I was sitting in the mountains of Macedonia, writing a lot of, had a lot of free time.
Send it to me. I'd be happy to read it. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Maybe I can publish it.
I'll send you the first couple chapters, see what you think of it.
Yeah, please do.
But that's not what we're talking here about. We, dear audience, we're not planning on doing commercials all day. We're actually going to talk about something, some of the issues that are rising up. By the way, so Fate of White America, what's the conclusion? And if we jump forward and do the compression?
Well, the Fate of White America, it's ambiguous, right? Because like we're living in the decline of the West in general, not just the United States. Yes, I mean, also Western Europe, Australia, Canada, we're all in the same boat, basically. And well, it looks at it sort of from a Spenglerian angle, like Oswald Spengler, the German philosopher who wrote the famous book about 100 years ago called The Decline of the West. And in his book, he basically stated that civilizations or cultures are like organisms. So they are born, they grow up, they mature, they wither, and then they die. And he says it's basically like an inevitable occurrence that civilizations or cultures die, just like organisms die. It cannot be prevented ever. So he views history as cyclical and not linear, right? Oh, yeah. Because the liberals today, the liberal mindset is always linear, right? Like back then in the past, people were savages and prejudiced and racist, you know, and society is becoming progressively better every year because we're giving more rights to different quote unquote disenfranchised people, like, I don't know, like foreigners, gay people, transgender people, and it grows. I mean, the list of what is being tolerated in the liberal linear worldview grows by the day, obviously. But they essentially
160 different genders.
Well, that too, right? So basically, they believe it's getting humanity is on an upper part of progress in their view, right? I mean, it's of course the opposite is true, because in reality, it's on the downward path of degeneracy, right? It's just how you look at it. But Oswald Spengler said history is not linear. It is cyclical, because each culture is its own organism. Yes. So after one culture dies, another culture grows and matures and comes into being, just like in nature, when an animal dies, right? Like, or a tree dies, something else will take its place eventually. So there's no vacuum in nature. So there's also no vacuum in history. And he said that the West right now is already in the old age stage, in the dying stage, so to speak. And Spengler argued that when this organism is young and vital, creative and full of energy, it's a culture, like ancient Greece was the culture phase of the West. Was the culture phase, ancient Greece, and then it was supplanted by Rome, and then you had the Roman Empire and the Roman Republic.
Would you consider that the West? I mean,
that's not the West. The West came later. I was talking about the ancient world, right, in Europe, because Rome eventually died, and
Eastern Rome died.
I'm talking about Western Rome, right? Like the Roman Empire itself, right, or Rome as a distinct civilization.
Well,
pretty much died. It collapsed. It was replaced by other organisms, but it was not the same as the Roman Empire.
The Eastern Romans, even when the revolution started to free Greece from the Ottoman rule, 1820s, the Greeks, the revolutionary Greeks, had to teach the local Greeks that you're Hellenic. No, we're not. We're Roman. They still consider themselves Romans, even after the Ottoman Empire. So in those areas, the Greek people only start calling themselves Greek again relatively recently.
Well, no, I completely agree with you. You also had the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation.
Which wasn't Holy Roman or Empire.
I know, which was neither Holy nor Roman. Right?
Or Empire.
Yes,
it was a confederation.
Or Empire. These are just words, right? It was not really that's my point. Like the actual Roman Empire died, yes, in the early first millennium, and basically, according to Spengler, when the organism is young and creative, it is a culture, and when it becomes too mechanized, it turns into a civilization. So according to Spengler, civilization is a rather negative development of a culture. Like a culture is when it's young, like a human being, like a teenager, or maybe a person in his early 20s, like full of plans, ideas, you know, very ambitious, very creative. But when he matures and gets older, all of this creative energy sort of starts dissipating. Yes. And then in this analogy, a culture turns into a civilization. So right now we are in the late civilization stage of the West. Yes, I mean, and the signs obviously are all around us. And Spengler wrote this 100 years ago. And 100 years ago, I would argue the situation was much, much better than it is today. Yes, because if you look at the symptoms, it's just crazy what's going on. Yes?
100 years ago, it was just post-World War One.
Nihilism,
collapse of the Golden Age. That's pretty easy to see. I mean, look at Germany, for God's sakes, in the 1920s. Anything went.
Well, the Weimar Republic, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Whatever perversion you wanted, you could have. Everything went. It's kind of what we see now, except back then it wasn't quite at that stage of actual economic and everything else collapse.
Yeah, well, that's why you have on X, for example, you have all these memes where, like, people on the right usually they talk about Weimar America. Yes,
Yeah.
because now because that's an apt comparison, in my opinion. And well, talking about Germany, because I discuss, like, for example, the issue of free speech. Yes, like I discuss with my fellow Germans sometimes, like the normal German citizen, the brainwashed German citizen, and I tell them, well, there's no free speech in Germany today. Which is an objective fact. I mean, it's not even an
Oh,
argument,
yeah.
right? And they get very upset. I said, no, it's not true. You can say anything you want, except but you can't use hate speech. That's not free
Whatever
speech.
that
It's an
is,
argument, right? Okay, but then what is hate speech? It's like some
know.
unidentifiable thing, and it's purposely. I mean, it's purposely not properly defined because you can put anything in it that you want, and that's what the government does, and that's what the authorities do. So, I mean, my argument is really the only time that Germany had something resembling free speech was actually in the Weimar Republic. Yes. I mean, not before and not since. Yes. I mean, I guess that was, in my opinion, probably one of the aspects that many people would view positively. Yes, like the free speech aspect, because now it is heavily curtailed. Like you cannot criticize in Germany today the current regime or establishment, yes, in any serious shape or form. So, like the opposition is in a very difficult position because they always have to discuss certain issues, but they can't use certain language to do so. They can't sometimes address the issue directly, but they have to find ways of describing them that don't violate certain speech codes.
You know, I'm trying to find. I might have erased it. I had a clip of the image on instructions on how you can criticize in the EU, not even Germany, on the level of the EU, how you can level criticism on the EU. It was a table that was meant, and the green one, like the legal way to do it, you have to say. Law, fact, point, and say it in very nice words without mentioning any politicians' names.
It's the same in
That's the
Germany,
limit
right?
of your ability to criticize the EU. Like,
Yeah.
wait a minute, where's and the worst one that'll get you arrested is, or I guess the EU can't arrest you, but they can
Yes. No,
sanction
absolutely, it's
you.
completely
It,
true.
it,
Like
you know, they can sanction you to
in
starve to
Germany
death.
today. Right. No, it's the same in Germany today. Like you cannot insult politicians because people of public life, like in certain positions, like people who are in office in the government, have sort of immunity from being criticized in a harsh way by the citizens. Yes. I mean, that's how it is. I mean, I hear about this all the time, like some pensioners calling certain politicians names because they're upset about their policies. The police comes at 6 in the morning, raids their house, confiscates their laptop and all the electronic devices. They have to go to court, everything.
No, I got rid of it. I wish I still had it. Yeah,
Yeah.
it was insane. I mean, it was just the level. Yeah, and that's right. That yeah, if you use harsh words and you use a
Well,
you
there's
pausing a
is
politician.
it is totally bizarre. Like you have Björn Höcke, for example. He's the AfD leader for the state of Thuringia, and he's probably one of the most popular politicians in Germany now because, I mean, he's very
Oh, yeah.
outspoken, he's very honest. He says things what I would say a large percentage of Germans actually think but don't dare to say in public. And I don't know, a couple of years ago, I mean, he used a certain phrase, right, in public at a campaign rally. The phrase was everything for Germany, right? I mean, that's the phrase that he used, yes. I mean, you would think, right? It's perfectly reasonable because he's a German politician and he was giving a speech about conditions in Germany today, and he was arguing that things need to change because I want to do everything for Germany, basically. Yes, I mean that should be considered
Well, yeah,
normal,
that
but
would
he
be
was
kind of
actually,
normal for a politician.
yeah, but
That
he
should
was.
be.
Well, he was charged with a criminal offense, right? Because the phrase "everything for Germany" was, well, according to the prosecutors, the German state prosecutors, was also used by the Nazis, yes. And it's true, it was used by the Nazis, yes. And this is why it is a forbidden slogan, because any slogan that was used in an official capacity by the National Socialist Party in the Third Reich is basically now banned, right? And he was actually fined 10,000 euros for using this phrase, yes. But the interesting thing is that phrase wasn't even invented by the Nazis. It was used in the 19th century by the German Emperor even. Yes, Wilhelm II used it. So that's why it's so grotesque, because he used the phrase and he was charged because the claim was the Nazis used it, but they didn't invent it. But what does it even mean? Does it mean like anything? You could say anything that the Nazis said, and they said a lot of things you can't say today. And anything the Nazis said doesn't even mean that they have had to invent it. It could just be something that they used
Right.
from the earlier times, even from the Middle Ages. Yes. So, and that's a scary thing.
He should have just added anything for Germany as long as it serves Israel. That would have been okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of politicians in Germany, I mean, in the opposition. I mean, it's not illegal in Germany to criticize Israel. Yes. I mean, people do it all the time. It is illegal, of course, to criticize Jews as a people, right? Because of Germany's past, I suppose. I mean, it's maybe reasonable, this kind of law, even though in general I'm against like any kind of laws that sort of limit expression of your political opinion. So right now in Germany, you have the issue that is being debated, not just in Germany, but also in Russia, right? It's the remilitarization and the mentality that goes along with it.
Yes.
Yes, because now you have a lot of rhetoric, like open rhetoric, where politicians, including German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, where he says that he envisions like German soldiers, I mean, in Ukraine, you know, and if need be, they should also shoot at Russian soldiers in certain situations. I mean, you have like the Pistorius, that the German defense minister, I mean, making statements that Russia is the enemy and the German populace should get used to this fact. So what does that mean, right? I mean, I think it means that the spirit of revanchism is sort of making a comeback. Yes. I mean, they're not saying it outright, obviously, but I think you can read between the lines. Like when they say such things, they're pretty much, in my opinion, sort of arguing that they really regret having lost in 1945 and they somehow want to get back at Russia. Yes. I
Oh,
mean
that's
that
exactly how it's heard in Russia.
I mean that seems to
There's
be,
no beating around the bush. That is
yeah, that
exactly
seems
how
to
it's heard in
be
Russia.
right. I mean that seems to be the prevailing mentality that is now, I don't know, running rampant in the German political establishment. And of course, they want to invest in the armaments industry, in the military industrial complex in Germany, like Kinz that makes the Leopard 2 tank. Yes, like the government wants a 40% stake, yes, in this company, obviously, to produce more weapons. I mean, Merz also said that Germany needs to be not Germany needs to have the strongest army in Europe again. Yes. I mean, yeah, and you see this, right? Like I walk around Germany, like I went to Frankfurt the other day, the train station, and you see these billboards, these massive posters now, like enticing young people to join the Bundeswehr, the German army. But interestingly enough, when you see these posters, you usually have, I don't know, like three, four soldiers, like with guns, like smiling, you know, like defend your homeland, something like this, some slogans. But all of them are always white European German looking. Yes.
Yes,
Yeah.
they are, aren't they? I've noticed that.
Every single time. Like you never
I love
see.
the poster with the "We're all Europeans," where you have
Right.
a white girl, a Arab man, an African guy, and like a Pakistani guy. Now
Right.
that's all Europeans. But you're right, defend
Yeah,
Germany and
like what?
defend France. It's all white guys.
Yeah, but that's the thing though, right? Like you said, when it's about promoting Europe, quote unquote, yes, it's like everybody, the whole world basically is Europe now. Yes, but when it's about, I don't know, picking up a weapon to supposedly defend your homeland against imaginary threats, then it's of course only the native population that is being depicted. My question though is, like, why is this? Yes, like what is? I mean, obviously it's by design. It's not by accident.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because everywhere else you look, everywhere, like posters promoting the European Union, TV commercials about for coffee or, I don't know, bread. It's always like a multiracial couple, like usually a black guy, a white woman with like mixed race kids. I mean, it's the same in the US. It's the same everywhere in the West now. And in movies too, like you have the big scandal about the Odyssey that's coming out, the new Christopher Nolan movie where Helen of Troy is some African actress.
I don't get the Africanization of everybody's history.
Yeah. I mean that's the trend now. Except when you're promoting the military, right? Then it's all
well,
white.
No. If you're promoting African, sub-Saharan African culture, it's got to be sub-Saharan Africans.
Yes, of
I mean
course.
You're not going to see a white, blonde, blue-eyed Shaka Zulu running around.
No,
or,
well, maybe
you know,
yes,
or Mandela as a brown-haired, you know, even a brown-haired, olive-skinned, you know, Italian or something. You'll
right.
never see that.
I mean, I think the motivation's gone, though. I mean, they make this, and I mean, but what is the psychology behind it of having these military recruitment posters with all white guys? I guess it means that they already assume that the minorities, including the ones that have German citizenship, are not going to be willing to fight for Germany, right? I mean, this is the assumption of the people that created the posters. So they're specifically addressing native Germans because they are probably more likely to even want to, quote unquote, defend their country. But even among the native population, I think the enthusiasm for this is very, very low. Yes. I mean, I read some polls that the percentage of people who are actually willing to fight and possibly die for defending Germany, it's in the lower percentages. Yes. And I'm not surprised, to be honest. Yes. Because, like, really, what is there to defend? I mean, because a lot of young people feel very alienated in Germany today. So a lot of them are wondering, like if I'm being asked to defend Germany, what am I actually defending? Right? Like, am I defending the establishment? Am I defending the status quo that is turning Germany into a nation of immigrants? Because this is what they're talking about nonstop, like in the mainstream media, that Germany is a nation of immigrants akin to the United States in the early days of immigration, and even today, right? I mean, they're saying like Germany is sort of some proposition nation, even though it isn't. Yes.
Well, right? You know, even as a nation of immigrants, interesting thing about America, you know that the American immigration standards originally were only for white people.
Yeah.
White people aren't necessarily white people. Because in the American view, the white people were Germanics, Scandinavians, French, British. Irish weren't white people. That's it. That was white people. And then through court decisions, because it's America and everything has to be court-based, white Irish people got the right to be called white people. Then Spanish people got the right to be called white people. Then eventually Italians got the right to be called white people. Then Greeks had to get the right to be, Armenians had to get the right to be called white people. And Slavs, who are half the white population, the majority of the blondes, actually, if you look at it, and redheads, had to get the right to be called white people because they're not white people. As far as
yeah,
the American law, it's insane if you think
right.
about it. All these blonde, redheaded people aren't white people because they're just because they're Slavs.
Well, you also had the fact that a lot of the Irish in the United States, like in the 19th century, they were indentured servants,
slaves,
basically like slaves. Yes,
contracted slaves.
Basically, was white slavery in the United States, something that today nobody really wants to talk about because a certain groups of people want to claim exclusivity to their slave status. Yes, I talk about this in my book a bit, The Fate of White America, because the United States was on a pretty solid, homogeneous, white foundation until 1965, right? When the Immigration Act in 1965 mm-hmm. changed everything. Because before that, you had the quota system, as you said, like only certain numbers of immigrants from certain countries were allowed. Yes, which the purpose of this was to keep the country stable. Because obviously, if you have a homogeneous country, ethnically homogeneous country, it is safer, more secure, and more stable. I mean, it's just common sense, and that's what people had back then, right? But then in 65, they changed all this. But they changed all this. A lot of people were worried when they changed this in 1965. And they promised that Kennedy, the president back then, he even promised, yeah, it will not change the ethnic makeup of the United States. Don't worry. Right.
Well, of course, it won't do it overnight. That's what I forgot to say. You know?
I mean, there's literally no benefit whatsoever in this diversity scheme that they're pushing on every single Western country, basically. I mean, always saying diversity is our strength, but I really don't see where the strength lies, because all I see is like riots and ethnic tensions, you know, self-segregation, ghettos, parallel societies, rising crime rates. I mean, that's what you see. I mean, these are official statistics. I mean, Trump wanted to change it. I mean, he made promises, right, about mass deportations and so on. Lots of people were hopeful. But he's not serious about it, obviously. Yes. Because in the West, even in Europe, I mean, they make a lot of promises, but none of them are actually serious about stopping immigration. And I should add, by the way, for example, Trump's during the campaign was saying we are going to start the biggest deportation program in American history. Well, now he's been in power for like a year and a half, and I don't see this biggest deportation program being implemented one bit. I mean, what I see is like ICE agents in like, I don't know, certain cities, like with TV crews, like propaganda effect, arresting people in restaurants or on fields, like dragging them down the street.
Oh, yeah, have those people turn out to be American citizens.
Well, that's that too.
Right?
But the point is that there's not mass deportations, because I mean, if they were serious about stopping mass immigration, what should they do? They should stop the incentive, yes, yeah, for people coming in the first place, which means they should punish the businesses that actually hire the illegals.
Stop. If they punish the businesses, they affect the donor class.
Yeah, but that's my point, right? That's they don't want to. They don't. It's the same in Europe, though, because there's a lot of money behind this immigration scheme. And, well, the other argument, to go back to what I said earlier, like Oswald Spengler, the argument could also be made that this mass immigration and the dilution of the ethnic core of Western countries is basically just symptomatic of the decline phase of the West. Because parallel to what is happening today at the late stage of the Roman Empire, it was quite similar, actually, because you had Rome, the capital city, was only 20% like ethnic Romans, was 80% people from all over the empire, also Arabs, Africans, you know, everybody was in Rome, while at the same time, the empire was still engaged in imperial overstretch, trying to conquer new territories and impose its political will on other nations and tribes. I guess that is what is very similar to what is happening today in the West, especially now with the United States, right?
Where I will slightly disagree on this, and I'll tell you why. You see, the Russian Empire, the way the Russian Empire worked, was very similar to the way the Roman Empire worked.
Yeah,
unlike the Western empires. When we came into a region, the Western empires, the classical Western empires, were a consumption empire. They came into new territories to grab resources, put down minimum amount of colonists, minimum amount of infrastructure to extract resources out of those areas, and they were the market for dumping extra production. They were the natural market for dumping products, which is one of the reasons the Americans rebelled, because they really weren't allowed to produce a lot of industry, because they were supposed to be the extra market for British production from the home islands. The way the Russian Empire expanded is we came into a new region. We didn't have second-class citizens. Whoever became part of the new region became part of the empire. They had the same rights as everybody else, We built cities, factories, schools, lifted them up, and we intermarried with them. We absorbed them that way, which is what the Romans did. If the territories that the Romans colonized, they Romanized. Those areas became Roman, and the people started thinking of themselves as Romans. Same if they're inside of Rome, they might not be Italian, they may be Celtic, but they were already thinking of themselves as Romans and they were acting like Romans,
Yeah,
which is
but
a
that's
very
not
big
necessarily.
difference.
Well, that's not necessarily true, though, completely, because, like, I mean, I mostly agree with what you said about the Russian Empire, because the Russian Empire can in no way be compared to the American Empire, precisely because the Russian Empire, like the Roman Empire, practiced what is basically ethno-pluralism. Yes, while the American Empire was always about the melting pot ideology. Yes, because the melting pot ideology tries to force all the different ethnic groups into one mold, ideologically speaking. Whether this works or not is another matter, because it doesn't really work. Yes, because the melting pot process, it doesn't function as it was intended to. While in the Russian Empire and the Roman Empire, you had what is the ethno-pluralist paradigm. Like in the Roman Empire, you had, for example, the Germanic tribes, you had the Jews, yes, and they were pretty much left alone, right? And they didn't automatically become citizens of Rome, by the way, when Rome conquered.
Well,
They
those areas
westernized.
didn't, but if you look at
Like
if you look at Gaul,
a lot
places
of
like that.
No, I mean a lot of the Germanic warriors or Germanic men, like they joined the Roman legions in Germania and did like 25 years of military service in a tower along the Limes, the wall, in order to get Roman citizenship. After the 25 years, they got Roman citizenship and a hefty pension. I mean, that was the incentive. That's how Rome didn't have to send its own men to man the border walls. They just conquered the territory and then recruited the natives, basically, with this incentive of becoming Roman citizens. And a lot of them did. I mean, which is completely natural, of course, because people usually think about themselves and their family first. But the other thing is why they didn't have that much resistance in the Congo territories is because of this ethno-pluralist philosophy. Because the Romans, they did not actually impose the Roman way of life on these Congo territories. Quite the opposite was true. They left these territories pretty much to their own devices, meaning they could still practice their religion, their customs, their traditions, speak their language. The only thing that was expected of these tribes and peoples was that they had to pay their respect to the Roman Empire, to the authority of Rome, which most of them did. Yes, the Jews, they didn't. Yes, they refused to what they called worship the emperor because they considered it idolatry. And this is actually the main cause of the Roman Jewish War. Yes, because the Jews would not submit to the authority of the imperial center, right? And I think in the Russian Empire, all throughout its history, it was pretty much the same. Because Russia was never really a nation state, in my opinion. It was always an empire, right? So I mean, you had the Russian Empire, the Soviet Union, which was still an empire, in my opinion. Now you have the Russian Federation, which is, of course, officially is not an empire, but it really is an empire. Because what is an empire? It's like a civilization state, yes?
Well, we're a civilization state, but I mean, look, even at the height of the Russian Empire, ethnic Russians were, and I'm counting Ukraine, what's today called Ukrainians and Belarus. That's all ethnic Russians. That's the Soviets that
Yeah,
created
no,
that.
I agree. I agree.
Ethnic Russians were in the 60 percentile,
Yeah. Well,
and by
no.
intermarrying with the locals, we changed. I mean, if you look at it, we started even though we never had the ethnic stigma of intermarrying with other peoples, not even the medieval era. Whenever we stopped a war, if we have a war with one of these nomadic tribes like the Kipchaks and others are coming through, and the war usually ended by the local Khan, the defeated Khan giving up his daughters as wives to the local to some local prince or his sons, and that's how they concluded peace. The Georgian wives, we never had that issue. So by intermarrying, we effectively absorbed all these smaller peoples.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the Spanish did the same in South America, by the way. That's why the Spanish experience of the conquistadors, the colonizers in South America, was completely different than, say, the English in North America because of the issue of intermarriage. It didn't, I mean, of course it happened in North America as well, but it was sort of frowned upon. It was not the norm, while in South America it was a norm from the very beginning, as you said. I mean, I'm not saying one is better than the other. It's just different historical
But you know,
experiences.
it was described to me as this way, by the way, with the Latins when they came into South America, Central America, said, you know, when the Latins, particularly when they got into like Brazil, for example, where they had all these small tribes who were very primitive, and they went back to the Pope and they asked, are these human beings or are these smart monkeys? There's a very key issue here, because if they're If they're smart monkeys, basically, or the Pope says that, then they're not human beings. That's a whole different way you treat with them. And the Pope said, no, they're human beings. So your number one job as a Catholic, as a conquistador would have you, is to bring them to God. And that means you're already limited in what you could do.
Yeah, of
In
course.
North America, where the Protestants came in, they didn't have any problems. They just looked at them
Yeah,
as, you know,
absolutely.
forest devils, red
Well, no,
devils.
well, you like, well, like I said, the experience was completely different, and I guess this Protestantism, liberalism, and capitalism all go hand in hand. Yes, because the whole spirit of the free market and unhinged capitalism is the Protestant ethic, basically. And which was there in the, I mean, even before the United States existed with the Puritans from the very, very beginning. Yes. And the creation of the white American ethnos, yes, was also done in direct opposition to what they considered the other, right? First, I mean, it was the Native Americans, obviously, and later on it was the Africans that they imported as slaves.
Right.
Yes. And
Who, by the
because
way, came in as first of all, the first Africans that came in were indentured servants, just like the
Yes,
Irish were
right.
kept as indentured servants.
Right. So the creation of the white American ethnos, which is completely real in my opinion, because if you go to like Lev Gumilev, the Russian anthropologist, I mean, he talked about ethnogenesis, right? Like how an ethnos is created, like meaning an ethnic group. And I mean, white Americans went through a complete ethnogenesis. This is why the white American today is not just like a white German or a white Englishman. He's his unique identity. He has a unique identity and is a unique ethnos because the ethnogenesis lasted for centuries. And it's completely real, obviously, because first it was established, as I said, in opposition to the other to define themselves as one group, even though they came from different backgrounds, because you had like Englishmen, you had Germans, you had French. So they had their own language, their own culture, their own heritage. But then they sort of shed a lot of this and fused into one new ethnic group, which then became the white American. Of course, white Americans today, you can say they claim, yeah, I'm German, or I don't know, I'm English, I'm Scottish, but you're not really German. You are not German. Your ancestors were German, but you're not really German anymore. Yes. Being
Yeah,
partially,
it
yes.
depends.
It partially
There are some
depends.
villages and
Yes.
places like that that are very, very
But
ethnic. But
yeah,
yes, the majority
I know. I
are.
would argue it's its own ethnic group now, the white American. And well, going back to what you said about Russia, though, like just real quick, I would like to add something like the Russian Empire, or the Roman Empire, actually, as a matter of fact, any empire, because you have the German term, it's called Reichsvolk, which means imperial people. And the imperial people is basically the founding stock, and you have this in every empire. Because like in the Russian Empire, in whatever incarnation, Russian Empire, Russian Federation, Soviet Union, the ethnic Russians, yes, they're the founding stock of the empire, obviously. I mean, it's not the Chechens, it's not the Tatars. This is not discriminatory, it's just basically a
Well,
fact,
it's
because it's the
yeah.
Russians that founded the empire and incorporated the other peoples into the empire. The other peoples are respected like they were in the Roman Empire because of the ethno-pluralist principle. But Russian is the leading culture, which means the Russian language is the culture of the empire, just like Latin was the culture of the empire in Rome. But still, the different tribes, even in the Roman Empire, they still spoke their own language, obviously. Just like I would say in Russia today, like if you go to Tatarstan or various other regions and certain autonomous republics, they still speak their own language, while, of course, also speaking the language of the empire, which is Russian. And a lot of the street signs, like in Kazan, in Tatarstan, for example, are bilingual, right? So they're in Tatar and Russian, mm-hmm. which is how it's supposed to be. What people should understand, I think, is that this imperial structure is not supremacist or racist, right? It doesn't mean, let's say, the Russians are somehow superior to the other peoples, because they're not. Yes, it just means, because they are the founding stock of the empire, that they are the ones that set the cultural parameters. And I guess it was very similar in the United States. I mean, up until a certain point, right, when these Anglo-Saxon traditions were considered the norm, because they were the norms of the founding stock, that is now being eroded, as we can see. And it is also being eroded in Western Europe, like Germany, for example. Yes, well, because now Germany becoming an immigrant nation, the ethnic majority or the root Germans are being, I'm not being respected anymore as such, and this is causing a lot of problems, in my opinion.
Yeah, we've had the first of all, Russians, Rusich. In this case, because I'll use it separately, because Russian is also a cultural issue, right? You can be any. The Volga Germans are, most of them consider themselves Russian, even if they're strictly ethnically German. But the Rusich, in this case, including Ukrainians and Belarus, because again, this is the same people, absolutely same people. It's like looking at a Saxon and looking at somebody from, I won't even say Bavaria, I think Bavarians are more different, somebody from Saxon and a Prussian, and saying they're different people. Well, no, they're still Germans. They're both Germans.
Well, it's even of population. Austrians are Germans, right?
Right. Well, no, don't tell that to the Austrians. I made that mistake in a bar once in the mountains talking. I was speaking Hochdeutsch. And the Austrian girls I was talking to looked at me like, because we were speaking English, and I went to Hochdeutsch, and like, du sprichst Hochdeutsch, was in Austrian, and they walk off pissed off. Like,
that's very silly though, right? I mean, that's like post World War II like brainwashing right there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was just like I'm sure stuck to English. The Russians though, the Rusich are 82% of the population in Russia. So that also helps. I mean, the founding stock is the main stock by and far. Yeah, I'm not against immigration, but immigration has to be done smartly. You know, who do you need? You need lawyers. Okay, let's just an example. Okay, probably lawyers is a bad idea. You need engineers. How many engineers do we need? Realistically speaking, you know, not like America just pumps in H-1B visas when its own engineers are without work. You know, we need these quotas filled. We pump in these types of people. And you can never be, you have to always take immigration in small enough chunks that you can assimilate within one generation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Because
they can never form enclaves.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why economic considerations is not the only thing that should be thought about. I mean, it's also cultural compatibility.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example, right? Like here in Germany, you have mass immigration going on right now in Germany, especially people from Africa and the Middle East coming in, new arrivals coming daily, basically. Pretty much since 2015, when Merkel opened all the borders, and they have remained open since, I should say, right? They were never closed, really. And Friedrich Merz, the current chancellor, before he got elected, of course, he promised to close the borders.
Well,
he promised to somehow manage the inflow and so on. Of course, he did none of this. Yes. So it was all empty words. Now, the thing is, in 2022, when the conflict in Ukraine started, a special military operation, yes, you had a lot. I mean, from where I live in this small German town, that pretty much was, I don't know, 95% white ethnic German. So in 2022, the conflict started in Ukraine. You had a lot of Ukrainian refugees coming to Germany, including my hometown. Yes, at the beginning it was mostly women and children, because men were not allowed to leave Ukraine, obviously, young men. So it was mostly Ukrainian women, Ukrainian children, and they were being housed in the forest, because there's this, there are these buildings, the forest is behind my house, and on top of the hill there are these buildings that were built by a German bank in the 1970s as like a seminar retreat sort of thing in nature. Yes, but they had been unused for several years, so they reopened these buildings to house these Ukrainian refugees there. So like when you walked around town, you all of a sudden heard Russian being spoken all over the place, in the supermarket, in the pharmacy, on the street, because obviously all these Ukrainian refugees were Russian speakers, right, for obvious reasons, because from Eastern Ukraine, which is all Russian speaking, not Ukrainian speaking. As a matter of fact, to this day, I have never met a Ukrainian refugee who's actually a native Ukrainian speaker, right? I mean, all of them are Russian speakers. And I wouldn't even say that all of them are pro-Zelensky and anti-Putin, which is also not the case. Yes, I mean, because the argument can be made, and a lot of people make this argument, that a lot of the Ukrainian refugees, they're actually economic migrants, yes, because they saw the opportunity. Okay, now we can go to Germany, or, I mean, Germany, the preferred destination, obviously, in Europe, because of the social benefits. Yeah, so anyway, so a lot of them were here then, and came here, and a lot of them went to school, like the children, because children have to go to school in Germany, it's the law, they cannot stay at home. So my children,
who, yeah, no, there's no homeschooling allowed in Germany.
No, no, homeschooling is forbidden. Yes,
it's allowed in Russia. It's,
yeah, I
have
know,
to pass
I
exams,
know.
But it's allowed
right.
in Russia.
I mean, I read some cases where like German couples with children actually sought refuge or applied for asylum in Russia,
yeah,
because of the homeschooling issue.
You know, there was a sad part, because it was a Catholic family. They had 8 children, but they came in as, and this was in, I think, 2018. So the laws weren't there yet.
Right.
They came in as tourists. They overstayed their tourist visa,
ah,
and eventually
cool.
they got
right.
deported. And nice. they flat out, they're Catholics. They didn't want their kids going through sex education. And we know how radical
yeah,
that
course.
Is in Europe these days.
Right.
But unfortunately, the government sent them back. Because all of, you know, you can't be refugees from a country that's not at war and all that. Those laws have changed.
Yeah, cool. Because now you have the ideological like refugee
right,
sort of status
right.
in Russia, when you are ideologically aligned with Russia's traditional values, which is an extremely positive thing in my opinion.
Yes.
And well, as I wanted to say, so you have these Ukrainian refugees in my town, including children. The children went to school, and my children, they speak fluent Russian, right? Because they were both born in Moscow, they were baptized in the cathedral where Pushkin was baptized in Moscow, And these Ukrainian kids or Russian kids, right, the new ones, the newcomers, they didn't speak any German, obviously, they only spoke Russian.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, none of the German students speak any Russian, and the teachers obviously don't. So in the class was very often only my children that spoke Russian. So they started interpreting for the teacher and all the other students, yes, what the Ukrainian kids or, I don't know, the Russian kids, the new Russian kids were saying, yes. And so you had a lot of Ukrainian refugees all over Germany. And from the very, very beginning, I wasn't opposed to this at all, because I thought, well, that's a good thing, actually, right? These people coming from Eastern Europe, mostly young people, first, because they're culturally 100% compatible, because they're Christian, they're basically European. So culturally and ethnically, they fit into Western Europe, including Germany, perfectly, in my opinion. So in my opinion, I always viewed it as a sort of enrichment, yes, at least not as a negative thing. So I was like, that's kind of nice, right? Because as you know, like Russians, Ukrainians, Eastern Europeans in general are culturally way more conservative than Western Europeans
yeah.
in general, right?
These days, yeah, yes. yeah.
Right. So this is how it was. And I mean, it's still ongoing. There's still Ukrainians coming. Now it's 2026, 4 years. So in 2022, it was mostly Ukrainians. But after like a year in 2023, early 2024, it was fewer and fewer Ukrainians that were coming, but more and more Africans and Arabs. Right. So now, because in my street, where I live, because I live right down the hill from where the refugee center is. So when I'm in the kitchen, like doing dishes or something, and I look out the window, I see like nonstop 24 hours, like young African and Arab men, mostly young men, walking past my kitchen window on the way to the bus stop. Because I guess that they don't really go to the center of the town where I live, because there's nothing to do. They just go to the bus stop, which is right down the street from where I live, and go to the train station and go to Frankfurt for whatever reason. Yes, but this is the reality now. So now you have, instead of like enrichment of traditional white Europeans, you now have Africans and Arabs from a completely different culture and ethnos. Yes, and mostly young men of military age, like barely any women, sometimes women with children also, but
Did they
these
try to recruit
majority
those in the
refugees now.
military?
Sorry?
Did they try to recruit those ethnic groups in the military?
Well, no, well, they can't because they're not citizens, right? Because they have refugee status and they're not allowed to work until their refugee status is sort of processed and they're actually officially accepted as refugees. And then you have this strange phenomenon in Germany where refugees or even regular unemployed people, you get money from the government. Yes. Now it's not a whole lot, but it's enough to live fairly comfortably, I should say. Yes. Now, and I talked with a lot of these refugees, including Ukrainian ones, that don't work, right? And I asked them, well, why don't you work? Why don't you get a job? I said, oh, well, why should I, right? I could get a job. I even had an offer, but then they get minimum wage. And the money they would make for working like 8, 9 hours a day would only be minimally higher than the free money they get anyway. So why should they go out and work 8 hours a day if they can just sit at home and do whatever they want and get free money? That's great. Obviously, they wouldn't do that. I would. Either I'd be crazy. So there's no incentive, you see.
I used to work for an Italian company as a supply chain director on projects, and I was one of the few non-Italian management. And we were sitting there eating dinner or lunch, and the Italians are all complaining about the mass migration. I'm like, well, gentlemen, the issue's easy to solve. Stop giving them money. Stop providing them housing. Force them to learn Italian, and force them to get a job. Half the people will self-deport because there's nothing in it for them. And you know what the response was? Stas, you don't understand. That's not humanitarian. Well, okay, fine, then be humanitarian, but don't complain your country's overrun. I don't blame those African migrants or whomever else
I
for
don't
coming
either. I
over.
would do the
They're giving
same
them
if I were
free
an African.
stuff.
Right. No, exactly. No, I never blame the migrants. Why should I? Because if I was a migrant, I'd do the same, right? I'd be crazy not to. Yes.
Let
So
me get this
obviously I
straight.
can't blame
I'll
them.
have enough money to live. I'll live a hell of a lot better than the shithole I'm coming out of. And everything's paid for.
Exactly. Well, that's why they're coming. I mean, this is literally why they're coming. And I'm quite sure, well, I'm certain of it that in Africa and the Middle East or wherever they are from, it is well known that this is the case, that if
Of
you go to
course, it
Germany, you
is.
get free
It is.
stuff. I mean, there is a reason why these migrants that I know come from the Middle East, for example, they walk all the way to Germany. They don't stay in Poland or Serbia, for good reason. Or Belarus, why should they? Yes, I mean, there's always this complaint by by the Western establishment, Western politicians, and Western media that Belarus, specifically, like Lukashenko, is waging a sort of hybrid war against the West and using migrants as a weapon.
All
Yes, but
3,000 of them.
right, and I always wonder, and even people, I mean, yeah, because the right, like the conservative camp in Western Europe, is divided, as you probably know, right? You have the pro-NATO crowd, and then you have the pro-Russian crowd, the normal crowd. Yes. But this pro-NATO crowd, I mean, they level this accusation. It's like, how can you support Russia and Belarus? They're like flooding our beautiful Europe with migrants. I'm like, okay, but I mean, even if that were true, even if it were true that Lukashenko is sending migrants across the border, right, into Western Europe, then I always ask those but who is forcing these Western nations to let them in, right? They could just say to Lukashenko, well, fuck off, we don't want him, right? But they let them in. So is it really Lukashenko's fault? It's still the Western Europeans who are letting them in,
Oh,
right?
absolutely,
So.
absolutely. Yeah, and
And they have to let them in, right? Like every
well,
time there's some crisis, like in Gaza, for example, they
right.
Happily nouns. Ah, yeah, the poor Palestinians. They should all come here, right? Why not?
Well, you know, I look at it a little bit different in that case because, you know, if Germany and amongst other countries weren't supporting the Israeli genocide that's going on in Lebanon and places, those people wouldn't be leaving. If NATO hadn't supported bombing Libya, that the U.S. Sarkozy led it, but it was U.S. sponsored by Obama. A lot of those people wouldn't have gone anywhere. In fact, Gaddafi even said, "Yeah, I'm the one holding back a lot of this
Yes,
immigration." You
right.
know that it the Americans got rid of somebody who wanted to replace the U.S. dollar with a gold dinar, but the Europeans got to suck up all the refugees and all the detritus from that war.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, no, you're absolutely right. This is why, in my opinion, Europe, I guess it's my continent, my culture, and I would even argue that the West as a construct, as this liberal, imperialist, supremacist construct, is the not just the enemy of the world, but also specifically the enemy of Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Because Alexander Dugin, the famous Russian philosopher, he put his last year, he wrote a good essay about it, where he basically says there's West One and West Two, right? Like West One are the authentic Europeans that want Europe to remain European, both culturally and ethnically. Yes, and then there's West Two, and West Two is basically the elite, and West Two is literally the enemy of West One because the European elites are literally enemies of their own
Oh, yeah.
citizens because they do everything to harm their own citizens and do everything to benefit this globalist machine, which is still obviously dominated by the United States.
I
Yes.
would even go as far as to say that the Western elites hate their own people.
Oh, but of course they
They
do, right?
despise their
Because,
own people.
well, they do. There's really no other explanation for, there's really no other explanation to explain what they do, yes, because what they do is clearly hurting Europeans. I mean, the average Europeans. It's very
Yeah.
obvious, and a lot of people can see it. And this is why, like in Germany, for example, the AfD is now at almost 30% approval rating.
Yeah.
Yes, it's like at 29%, and the CDU, the ruling party, Friedrich Merz's party, the Christian Democratic Union, is now at 22%. Yes, I mean almost 30%. That's quite a lot, right? I mean, it's one
Oh, yeah.
third basically of Germans that are sick and tired of the status quo. Also sick and tired of the constant warmongering rhetoric of the current. Of the elite that is currently in power. Yes, because the AfD is pretty, I mean, the AfD, well, it's the alternative for
Right.
Germany. It's the only, I would say, patriotic opposition party in Germany. And I would even go as far as arguing that Germany is really a two-party system. Yes, you have like all the parties. It's basically, but it's a unity party because all they all do and want the same thing. And then you have the AfD. So you have the AfD against the rest, two-party system. And well, the AfD is opposed, is not necessarily opposed to the remilitarization of Germany. It is opposed to the direction that this remilitarization is guided into. Because Tino Chrupalla, for example, he's one of the leaders of the AfD. He said the other day, it was actually quite shocking, to be honest, because until quite recently, the leadership of the AfD was in had extremely good relations with the Trump administration, right? With the MAGA movement. And in my opinion, understandably so, because I mean, I view Trump very positively and the MAGA movement quite positively myself until recently. Yes. I mean, until he started this completely unprovoked attack against Iran, which basically ruined everything.
Well, supporting genocide in the Middle East didn't help
Well, that's
either,
it,
you
right? And yeah, anyway, so now the MAGA movement is being destroyed, if it hasn't been destroyed already. So
know.
now
It's
the
destroyed.
AfD, well, now the AfD is distancing itself from
Right.
Trump. And Tino Chrupalla, one of the leaders, even said that all American bases should be closed on German
Wow,
soil,
that's
and the
radical.
American nuclear weapons that are on German soil also have to go. The Americans basically have to go. The American military has to get out of Germany. I
And
mean, this
that's why
is
they're Nazis. I mean, obviously they're Nazis. They want peace.
Well, that's what they use, though, right? Like a
I know, I know. I'm
Nazi,
being sarcastic,
according to them, is
but
like, right? Not, yeah, well, yes. Well, Well, they're Nazis in the eyes of the establishment, because, but they're literally saying what a very, very large percentage of Germans also actually want. Yes, because the AfD, they want to, I mean, again, I mean, a lot of lies are being spread about the AfD. The AfD is racist, it's anti-immigration. It's not true. It's not even anti-immigration, right? I mean, it just doesn't want senseless immigration, right. Destructive immigration. It wants quality immigration. I'm in favor of immigration if it's quality, controlled immigration.
Exactly.
You take the people that you can incorporate into the country that are compatible and that can actually benefit, contribute to the economy.
Yeah.
Yes. These are the people you want. You don't want like hordes of illiterate people, basically, that only drain money out of the government and not put any in. Yes.
Right.
I mean, that's just common sense, right? I mean, that's what the AfD says. I mean, the Alice Weidel, the other leader of the AfD, I mean, she's lesbian, an openly lesbian. She has a non-white girlfriend from Sri Lanka. Yes,
ooh.
I mean, it's a fact. Yes, I mean, it's not a secret.
Absolute Nazi.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? So, yeah, but of course, the mainstream media is losing control of the narrative, though. This is why, especially among the younger generation, the AfD is now so popular. Not so much among the boomers, because the boomers, well, they're on the way out anyway, because they're all dying out. They still believe the mainstream narrative because they still watch like government TV channels and read like the newspapers and crap like this.
Yeah.
While the young generation, they don't get their news from state-sponsored TV programs. They get it from X, so Telegram.
Right,
And some of these, like Tucker Carlson or the German equivalent of Tucker Carlson, Compact Magazine is the number one patriotic magazine in Germany. They have a YouTube channel with more than 500,000 subscribers, like 600,000. And they're extremely pro-Russian, right? And common sense in pretty much everything they argue. Yes, I mean, I'm almost totally in line with what they say. I mean, I've written some articles for their magazines as well.
Tell them I'm ready to be interviewed.
I can.
And by the way, I am. I'm a quarter German. You know that.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
My grandfather is German.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put in a good word for you.
Joseph Hartmann.
Right.
Joseph Mark Hartmann, who after he was captured by the Red Army, before he joined the Red Army, he was an officer in the Polish Horse Cavalry.
Interesting.
He was in Western Poland of that time, which was
right.
German, former Kaiserreich. He was a former German aristocrat, and when he got captured, they changed his last name,
right?
Because there's a stupid Russian tendency of taking Western H's and turning them into Russian G's.
Yeah,
even though we have an H, we have an H friggin'.
I had this discussion.
I don't know why they do that.
Yeah,
Hartmann became Gartmann, so he became
I know. What is that? Gittler instead of Hitler, right? So
I don't know why they do that. We have a hair sound, so we have
like
a Hitler.
Or like, there's a famous German poet called Heinrich Heine, and in Russian it's Heinrich Gene, for example.
I know.
I don't know why they do it.
It's the same thing as, by the way, Willis. So we have a V sound, but for some reason they spelled it Willis through an O sound.
Yeah, like, yeah, right.
We have the friggin' letter. Why are you rewriting the? It just drives me insane. Nobody can answer. It's just the way
it
is.
But they're not consistent about it though, right? Like Harrison Ford, they use Harrison, yes, and not Harrison, for example. But with Harry Potter, it's Gary Potter. And with my last name, it's Hoffmeister, not Goffmeister. Right.
I know it's ludicrous. My grandfather went from being a hard man to being a gardener. One letter.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's how it is. I mean, I know because here in Germany, you have a lot of the Volga Germans, I guess, that came to Germany after the dissolution of the Soviet Union. A lot of them came from, like, I don't know, Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan.
Oh, yeah.
Stalin had them deported, a lot of them, to these countries, to these Soviet republics, because, well, I suppose he thought they were a fifth column, or there was a threat of a fifth column during the war. And well, I guess in the early 90s, a lot of them came back to Germany. Like, that's why even before you had all these Ukrainian refugees on German streets or in German public life, there was already a lot of Russian speakers. I mean, there are really a lot of Russian speakers
There's a lot of them
in
moving
Germany.
back now. There's
Right.
especially
Yeah.
after
No, I know some
Merz
of them.
said
They've
that they're
moved
all
back.
possible agents of Putin.
Right.
So
Yeah.
yeah, that was a good signal.
Yeah. No, I've met some in Moscow that actually moved back from Germany to Russia because of society of the absolutely deplorable societal conditions in Germany right now. Yes.
On that note, I'm sorry, I got a hard stop. I've
Okay.
RT wants me to come out onto
Yeah,
the
sure, no
so
problem.
I've got to run over there. Guess I'll gotta change shirts into something more respectable. RT.
Right. Well, good luck with your RT interview.
Thank you, thank you.
But
Yeah,
you're doing excellent work there, so
thank you.
I
I st still can't get a get my own channel, or my own channel, my own program.
Well,
I've been
but
pushing for.
I'm pretty confident you will.
They make decisions very difficultly.
Right.
They're very bureaucratic in that point, to make a decision like that. So
But your YouTube channel is really taking off.
it working on it. Yeah, I
Okay.
still get a feeling I get at least partial shadow ban, because
Yeah, with YouTube, you
it,
have to be careful anyway to not get banned completely.
oh
That's
yeah,
what they
a
do all the time.
absolutely,
Right.
absolutely. Sometimes I have to edit some of the things people say because, like, yeah, why I may agree, may not agree, and I would normally wouldn't because that's the person's opinion. But then if you're putting it on YouTube, it's like, yeah, that's gonna be,
Well, that happens to me, right? Like I have to censor myself because of German speech laws, right? So because sometimes I say things accidentally or something in an interview, and then after I say, wait a minute, was it a good idea to say this? Maybe I shouldn't have said this, right? So.
I will say with this, as a good ending on this. Last time I was in the US was 2018. I was staying at my parents' house, which is a retirement community. They were here waiting for their residency. And you know, I'd lived in, I mean, obviously, you know, I worked after the military. I worked in corporate America. Self-censorship is 100% corporate America. I mean, like the Russian saying goes, measure seven times, cut once. You know, there's more like think through 20 times before you open your mouth. And in Russia, you don't have to do that. So I came back and I thought I was self-censoring. And I look, as I was talking to my parents and neighbors, and I look in their faces and like, nope, I'm not self-censoring. Not
Yeah.
that they're, you know, I'm self-censoring, but I'm not self-censoring at their level.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, I could never live in America again. I would be fired from any friggin' corporate job because I've 16 years I've been back, and I'm, well, at that point it wasn't 16 years, at that point it was 8 years. But at that point you just stop doing that. Wow, my God, I can pretty much just say what I want, unless it's
Right.
something insanely radical.
Yeah, no, right.
And you can't do that in the West. It's
Well, you cannot.
no
Well, especially not in Germany. Like I
nor
said,
in America either.
yeah, I know. I mean, like you said, there's always professional risk because people get deplatformed, they get kicked out, they get financially ruined, you know. In Russia, like every time I'm in Russia, I feel like mentally, like completely free, right? And I don't feel like this in the West anywhere. Yes, as you said, because in Russia, you can pretty much speak openly. Yes.
And I will tell you one thing before we end. Even in the Soviet Union, well, okay, the late Soviet Union, I won't go to the radical early Soviet Union, but 1950s and on, you had more freedom of speech than you do in modern Western Europe and modern US. You
I
could do
believe
an
you.
off-color joke and nobody would go, oh, okay, your career's gone. Left, get out, you know,
Yeah.
go die in the woods somewhere from starvation. That's the insane part. The Soviet Union, especially in the 70s and 80s, my God, the Soviet Union was freer than the modern West.
Yeah, no, well, I believe you. Yeah. Well, the
So
West is
anybody listening,
completely
that
unfree. It's a
yeah,
mental prison.
oh, it is. It is. I mean, 15,000 people were arrested in the UK last year for not, I'm not saying all of them went to jail, but 15,000 people were, by their own statistics, were arrested last year
Yeah,
for thought crime, for thought crime.
Germany's number two, I think, with almost 10,000. Yes.
Russia had 400,
Yeah. Well,
with a population
that's
like 3.5 times larger than the UK's,
exactly. Well,
four times larger than the
that
UK's.
tells you everything.
So if it was per capita, it would be somewhere around 60,000 in the UK.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
For thought
Right.
crime. That's, I
Yeah, yeah,
mean,
yeah. Yeah. Well, what can you do? It's insane. And for the most harmless things that people say, like not even terrible things, in my opinion. I mean, true things. Yes.
Yep, absolutely. Constantine, thank you for joining the show. We will be back and sooner, I think, than the last time. I think last time you were on, it was 2025.
Right.
So I have to get you back on sooner than that. And
well,
congratulations
thank
with the
you very
book. And we're in touch anyway. So,
of course,
everybody, leave your comments. If Constantine will have the link so he can answer if he wishes. Leave your comments and we will see you on the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, before we go, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on my personal Substack, which is eurosiberia.net, on which I write one or two, sometimes three articles per week about, you know, culture, politics, history, from a sort of conservative perspective. I have multipolarpress.com, which is affiliated with my publishing house, Multipolar mm-hmm. Press, on which I publish writings by a variety of authors on a daily basis, including English translations of Alexander Dugin's articles. And I've published some of your articles.
Yes, you have.
And yeah, and then you can, of course, get my books on Amazon. Right now, there's two of them available. One is called Multipolar Galaxy, which is about Star Wars as a myth of civilizational rebirth, in which I talk about the first six Star Wars movies, George Lucas's original vision, and tie it in with the emerging multipolar world and the sort of the parallels that we see in the movies. And the latest one, we discussed it, the Fate of White America.
Star Wars, where a conservative imperial order that was building up different countries was fighting radical religious psychopaths.
Well, actually, it's the opposite, right? Because I view the rebels as the multipolar resistance against the imperial hegemon. Yes.
There's actually a trend. If you go on YouTube, there's a bunch of videos trending that, well, actually the Empire was right.
Yeah,
these guys
know,
are radical fanatics, yeah. You know, and so on. So it's an interesting little take.
It is. Right. Yeah. No, I agree. My take's a bit different, though.
Yeah. For each his own. But it's, like I said, it's an interesting take to see
all
how they come at that.
Right.
So everybody, thank you. Thank you. Before we start off on another hour of conversation.
Yeah, well, it could easily happen. But
oh, yeah, we could do that next time. We cover civilization concepts in Star Wars.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Everybody, thank you very much.